Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 27, Attack by Chandavega on the City of Puranjan, Text 21. Kadachidatmanasa Brahma Lokan Mahimgatam Bhavre Brihadvatam Mantu Janati Kama Mohita. Translation. When I once came to this earth from Brahmaloka, the highest planetary system, the daughter of time, wandering over the universe, met me. Knowing me to be an avowed brahmachari, she became lusty and proposed that I accept her. Purport. The great sage Narada Muni was a Naistiki brahmachari, that is, he never had sex life. He was consequently an evergreen youth. Old age Jara could not attack him. The invalidity of old age can overcome an ordinary man, but Narada Muni was different. Taking Narada to be an ordinary man, the daughter of time confronted him with her lusty desire. It requires great strength to resist a woman's attraction. It is difficult for old men, and what to speak of young. Those who live as brahmacharis must follow in the footsteps of the great sage Narada Muni, who never accepted the proposals of Jara. Those who are too much sexually addicted become victims of Jara, and very soon their lifespan is shortened. Without utilizing the human form of life for Krishna consciousness, the victims of Jara die very soon in this world. Om Jnanati Manandasya Ginandana Salakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapanantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaisnavam Scha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sivisakam Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavane Swari Vrishabhana Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatrubhyacha Sakripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaisnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'm thinking of a conversation where Srila Prabhupada was describing that the symptoms of old age were very difficult to bear. And a young man was commenting that he didn't think it was such a big issue. Then Prabhupada said, you just don't know. You don't know what it's like. So although what is described here is a material benediction, where a brahmachari is remaining youthful, that benediction is favorable for spiritual life, because when all one's sensual faculties remain in good condition, throughout one's life and even in the end of one's life, then that makes it so much easier to focus on the Supreme Lord. Because the weakness of old age is simply creating so many impediments, where even basic activities such as chanting 16 rounds can become a major challenge. So that's all I want to say about staying young. Now let's look at the transcendental benefits of Brahmacharya, which is more interesting. The transcendental benefits are several. Naturally, one who is fixed in Brahmacharya will gain in determination. It will abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanyagamina. A portion of spiritual life depends on regular practice, and within that regular practice we can actually build up certain qualities of character. So there's a benefit there. So in this way, Brahmacharya can be a contributing factor to determination. I say a contributing factor because there are obviously other factors which may even function on a deeper level in terms of one's in-depth understanding and realization of the position of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one is deeply convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and that He is Paramgati, the ultimate purpose of anything in life, then obviously one can be very firmly fixed in determination regardless of his position. If that faith, if that conviction is very deep and very strong and becomes strengthened again and again by all one's actions, when all one's actions are simply there to reconfirm and deepen one's faith in Krishna as the Supreme Lord, then one can easily transcend any material condition of life. However, the Grihastha ashram creates a lot of distraction, and it does create attachment to sense enjoyment. Even kamusmi bharatar sabha, even that sexual activity which is allowed and authorized in scripture, even garbhadana sanskara performed strictly according to proper standards still awakens material attachment. Thus, there is always a risk in getting married. What to do? Better avoid it. That is for sure. But if somehow or other, if one thinks it's really too late, then what to do? Then make the best use of a bad bargain. Then somehow or other, be first class. Srila Prabhupada said that when the husband is first class and the wife is chaste, then married life will be heaven. Right? So, as much as heaven exists in the material world and even on the heavenly planets. That's sannyasi's purport. Even on the heavenly planets, you know, still not happy. So what to do? throughout the material world, it remains a place of misery. Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Puraravatino Arjuna. Therefore, our primary interest is to minimize our material needs and to increase our devotional service. That is our interest. And brahmacharya primarily is favorable for that particular purpose. In this day and age, anyway, even the brahmacharis and sannyasis are not living that austere. So, in terms of practicing austerity, which is kind of the prescribed dharma for the ashram, in this age, one has cushions on all sides. So, life is not really making us strong through practicing austerity. The modern society is organized in such a way that it's basically weakening determination, because austerity is so much removed that even the basic struggle for existence has been reduced to having to push a button, which is kind of hurts the finger. So it's difficult in this age to build up strength to practicing austerity. Some, though, are determined to go that route and make sure the bath water is icy cold and the floor terribly hard and all kinds of other arrangements to make sure that sense gratification is minimized, one sweet a month and other such, and even that we give up in Kartik. So austerity may be put in the foreground, and we see that Lord Rishabhdev is stressing austerity. Nayam deho bhajam nirloke kastan kamam arate vibhutyam ye tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam sujyat yasmat brahma sukhyam tvanantam. Lord Rishabhdev is describing the benefits of austerity to his sons and saying that one may attain brahma sukha, transcendental happiness, and so on. So he's referring to devotional service, because austerity may be performed for a material purpose as well, and that will certainly not give one brahma sukha. It must be austerity in connection with the Supreme Lord that can give us brahma sukha, and no other austerity. Other austerity could be preliminary, but not more than that. As Srila Rupa Goswami states in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that he points out that jnana and vairagya are only preliminaries. They cannot actually, they are not limbs of bhakti. So therefore they will not help us directly to develop any love of God. Rather, they can create favorable circumstances through which we can maybe focus more on devotional service. And that is the primary advantage that one can gain from the more renounced ashrams, where one can preserve time and energy. Bhishma Dev is saying that if you want to save money, then avoid the association of women. That's one of the instructions he gave to Yudhisthira Maharaj. Again, this is not a sexist remark, even if, my own realization was that if you want to save time, avoid the association of women. That was... when I, after 24 years in a particular ashram, moved on to the next, I must say that the one thing that I discovered was that I had oceans of time. I finished my rounds, chanted the extra ones, I read, and then what? Still had time left. It was kind of amazing how much time. Well, the time difference. There is definitely another time zone in terms of the two ashrams. So that's to be considered, right? So brahmacharya has advantages in terms of time zones. But then again, many brahmacharis, they wind up in twilight zone. Shall I or shall I not? Right? And that's another issue. The problem with the brahmachari ashram is that in many cases the door is not closed. And as long as the door is not closed, then there is so much distraction. Once one closes the door once and for all, then it becomes more simple, because then there's nothing to entertain. There is no question anymore. Because the question can consume a lot of time and energy also. So, therefore, this purport is also indicating that it may be a good idea to follow in the footsteps of Narada. Those who live as brahmacharis must follow in the footsteps of the great sage Narada Muni, who never accepted the proposals of Jara. So it is kind of, in an indirect way, propagating lifetime brahmacharya. And I must say that I think that after a while, that question becomes relevant to a brahmachari. One should not postpone it and postpone it to deal with that question. One should not, after 20 years, still think, well, maybe I should do it after all, or sort of, or whatever one might think. Better that after a certain number of years, when one is actually fixed in the practice, that one says, yes, why not? Why not maintain this? I've maintained so far, so I have found that if I maintain a certain standard of life, that it is quite feasible. Now I may as well keep it like that and say, I'll give it a miss this lifetime. Of course, one cannot remain in the same position. It is not like that. In the beginning, we come to spiritual life not out of love of God. So we come to spiritual life because we are dissatisfied in material life. And therefore, part of our motivation is that we are driven by dissatisfaction in material life, by frustration. Frustration is not a motivation that can sustain us very long in spiritual life. So it does require that one follows also the part or the example of Narada, where he constantly glorifies the Supreme Lord and where he is always distributing the mercy of the Lord. These two factors are further factors that can help one maintain a renounced position. That Krishna reciprocates with brahmacharya is undoubtedly a fact. Because we see that brahmacharis, they attain a very high destination in the universe, even if they are not going back to Godhead. We see in Vedic literatures that those who are committed to brahmacharya reach destinations beyond the heavenly planets. The Brihad Bhagavata's Amrita is describing, is giving us some information about the Jana Mahar and Tapa Lokas, which is in Bhagavatam not very elaborately described. So in that way, that's interesting. And it explains that the Jana Loka are the residences of the Prajapatis, and that the Prajapatis who are very detached from sex life, who really are sages, who engage in sexual activity for procreation. And naturally some attachment may be there, but they are otherwise really focused on austerity and purification, and then engaging in these sexual activities for procreation. Unlike the demigods on the heavenly planets, who are more engaging in sexual activities for enjoyment. Then, still beyond the Janaloka, the Maharloka, where there are sages who are celibate, and in Tapaloka, a particular brahmachari destination, which is under the control of the four Kumaras. So, here we see something about the brahmachari destinations. The sannyasis said they can attain Brahmaloka. Of course, Vaishnava sannyasis do not have much desire to attain either the Jhana, Mahar, Tapa, or Brahmalokas, nor the heavenly planets. We just want to go back to Godhead. So, but some benefits are there. Although Prabhupada often said that all ladies should get married, he also occasionally said that some could remain single, right? And encouraged some of them also in that direction. It is possible, but it does require a high level of spiritual, of absorption in glorification of Krishna. That must really be our interest, and one must be detached from this this material world. Just like in the famous verse, Prayena alpa yusa kalavisme yuge janaha, there mandusa manda matiyo manda bhagya hi upadruta. It is described that in this age of Kali especially, everyone is always agitated, upadruta, always agitated. So there is constantly something in the material world to agitate our mind, non-stop, always something, either in a positive sense or in a negative sense, agitated. Agitated by pleasant objectives or by unpleasant ones. So, one who is desiring to remain in a renounced position will have to rise above this agitation, and will have to learn to switch off the agitated state of mind and to just be absorbed in the glorification of the Supreme Lord, and to just let go of all other things that cannot be controlled anyway. All the material world will never get it under control. Like some managers begin to hold their head in despair. It's a fact. There is no hope. It's a lost battle. In English, there's a saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think we can turn that around. If it is broke, right, there's no way it's ever going to be fixed. That's the material world. It's fundamentally broken, right? No matter what. It's just, and anyone who is trying to fix it is cracked, as they say in India. What can be done, unfortunately. So, it's a bottomless pit. Now that Krishna Kshetra is here, I recall the last time we met when we were invited by some devotees to attend a program with a Chinese, Qigong or something, a Qigong master, a lady. And I remember in Berlin, and in Berlin, and she was collecting all the negative energy that was in the room, and it was, and everyone had to just take the negative energy out of their consciousness and throw it on a big pile. And then if you wondered, yes, but what about this huge pile of negative energy? No problem. The Qigong lady fixed it quite expertly. At one point, she took that whole pile of negative energy and threw it all in a black hole in the universe. That was a classic. See, it was, that was extraordinary. Well, maybe she did. I've always wondered about the purpose of these black holes. They are the garbage cans of the universe. Now we know. Ancient wisdom from China. Anyhow, it was interesting. We can try. We can try to conquer the agitation of the mind. Maybe Qigong is not the ideal approach. I'm not advertising. I would say it takes some practice and some willpower to just detach from the mind and to leave it. It can be done when one has no faith. Like one of my my favorites is the statement of a declaration of no faith in sex. I like that because sex is ringing at our doorbell from time to time, and is back again. And just when you thought that it was all over, there it is again. Sexual agitation. I'm back. I just read about a cat in America that they tried to get rid of this cat and drove all the way from the northern states to California, left the cat in California, and the cat walked back home. And yeah. So, quite impressive. And sexual desire is no less potent. No matter where you leave it, it will always re-emerge again and again and again. But if we have no faith, if we have no faith in sex, then it becomes much easier to say no. Yeah, yeah, here you are, I know. And there's an opportunity, I know. But I know it's not going to make me happy. Therefore, why invest so much energy into this particular activity? That is the basic principle of brahmacharya. No faith in sex. It's not just from take a piece of wood and put it between the teeth. That at the time of entering the brahmacharya, here's your saffron cloth and here's your little piece of wood. And we all bite. That's not really the approach. At one point, it gets difficult. Just like Srila Prabhupada described the yogi in India who had somehow or other done some body piercing ahead of his time and put a lock on his genital, right? And walked around naked with this huge padlock on his genital. And Srila Prabhupada raised a question. He said, that is very nice, but the question is, who has the key? Which... Yeah. So, considering all these things, I think one must, if one has no faith, then maybe, no faith in sex, then maybe one can throw the key away. And that would be advantageous. Then one engages in devotional service and needs to be really absorbed. Of course, the purpose is not to maintain brahmacharya. The purpose is to simply serve Krishna all the time. In some cases, the purpose really becomes brahmacharya. And the focus is so much on being a brahmachari, and one never thinks of Krishna, only about brahmacharya, 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 brahmacharya. Then usually the R's start rolling. In Rajasthan, there is a town called Rara. I wonder if that particular brand of brahmachari is coming from that town. It could be. Right? But it's not absolutely the way to go about it. Our focus should simply be on Krishna. So therefore, in the renounced ashram, one principle to survive that helps a lot is to be relaxed. One must be quite relaxed in the renounced order of life. It's relaxed, referring to the mode of goodness, to the quality of being peaceful, unlike accepting this kind of renounced position in the mode of passion and with a lot of effort and determination, which is very difficult to maintain. I have in the past taken up the topic of the determination of the kshatriya and the determination of the brahmana in relation to Karna, who was displaying the determination of a kshatriya when he had satisfied his guru Parasuram, and Parasuram was sleeping with his head on his lap. Indra took the form of an insect with a huge Black and Decker drill on its nose and drilled a nasty hole in the leg of Karna. And Karna just grit his teeth and didn't even flex a muscle. And in this way, remained a peaceful pillow for his sleeping spiritual master. After his spiritual master awoke and saw blood on the leg of Karna, he smelt a kshatriya. He immediately realized, what is this blood? How could this blood be on his leg? How could such an injury be on his leg? And how could he sit here, like, totally in an unmoving state? It's not possible. No one but a kshatriya could have such level of tolerance. So I always thought this a very interesting point, because it sort of reflected how the determination of the kshatriya was classified as greater than or the tolerance of a brahmana in this case. The kshatriya tolerating on the strength of determination, and the brahmana more tolerating on the strength of knowledge. But the determination of the kshatriya is there only for a limited period of time, whereas in the long run the brahmana is more tolerant because of his knowledge. He remains fixed in his tolerance. Whereas simply the determination of the kshatriya is, I shall do it, I will do it, I'm going to do it, and so on, is the kind that runs out of steam one day. And then, but it must be said, balavan indriyan gramo vidvamsam apikarsati, that even a man of learning is also struggling. The senses are so strong. So strong. Therefore, the only way to really rise above the sexual agitation is through love of God. There is no other way. And until we come to that stage, we can never rise above. That is the situation. So, somehow or other, the focus should go towards developing love of God. And love of God is attained by devotional service, particularly out of all these 64 aspects of devotional service. We have to chant the name of the Lord as the primary process. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, along with the chanting of the holy name, added one principle. He said to Satyaraj Khan that the duty of a Vaishnava was Vaishnav Sevana and Nirantar Krishna Nama Sankirtan, or serving the Vaishnavas and to incessantly chant the holy name. Because by serving the Vaishnavas, we can attain blessings. And these blessings are very important, because all the Vaishnavas, as a result of their service, the goodwill of Krishna rests upon the Vaishnavas. So, therefore, Vaishnavas, they can attract the mercy of Krishna. And, ultimately, love of God is a gift. It can never be attained by one's own practices. Simply when somehow or other Krishna is pleased to bestow it upon us, then love of God may be attained. So, if the Vaishnavas are requesting Krishna to bestow it upon us, if the Vaishnavas bless us, then Krishna may, then His grace may fall upon us. So that is ultimately the essence. And at that stage, who cares about ashram? Right? Who cares about ashram? Yeah. It really doesn't matter. And we see how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates were really way beyond such considerations of varna and ashram, and were completely transcendental. And how Srivas Thakur was showing all the symptoms of a Paramahansa, unaffected, when his son had died, and so on. So many examples. So Mahaprabhu's movement is ultimately meant for Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, engaging in pure devotional service with great force, to really make a great effort in devotional service, which is difficult for those who have grown up in the comfortable world of the modern society in the age of Kali. Just the last few days, some of the basic fruits that we always have available are now running out because of the ash from the volcano, and it could happen, I saw, that we might run out of grapes. Can you imagine? Our whole Roman profile goes to hell. So, what to do? It's getting rough. It's getting rough, and predictions are there is more to come. You know, I mean, we advise all the passengers to keep their seatbelt fastened all the time and to keep the brace position in mind. It looks like it's gonna get rough. One of these days. That would be interesting. I'm looking forward It's been very boring for a long, long time, and I really wouldn't mind a bit of a change. The year 2000 was a total letdown as far as I'm concerned. And I really hope that 2012, you know, that 2012 is going to offer us a better program, if possible. Yeah. And otherwise, we have our devotee astrologers who come with 2013, you know, just in case 2012 misses out. Don't worry, we can still, 2013 is still on the cards. If you're interested, you know, we'll forward you the predictions, which is disaster till 2050 or something. At 2049, and then everyone will start to get more spiritual. I'll be dead and gone, but anyway, that's okay. For the young whippersnappers, we wish you a happy future. Okay, I think I should really come to a conclusion now. Brahmacharya is a good thing, right? Even Grihastha Brahmachari is also something to keep in mind. I think it's helpful. We should really not take it too lightly. Let's have it and then carry on and get into devotional service. And it saves a lot of distraction when things are clear. And that's pretty good. And for those who are amongst the last of the Mohicans, a few of those who are still not extinct, walking around in saffron, boys, keep up the good work. Don't let them discourage you and say things like, statistics are against you. You know, statistics are not everything, you know. Ultimately, you got it all in your own hands, you know. You got the power, you know. And we are with you all the way, isn't it, Swami? Yadunanda Maharaj is very active in organizing the second European Brahmachari Convention, and Krishna Kshetra Prabhu will be one of the keynote speakers, I have heard. In short, the support is there. Yeah. We're with our team. With these words, I'd like to end. And if there are any comments, questions. Is Grihastha Ashram is what?
More suitable.
Yeah. For a manager. You could make a case, you know, when Priyavrata was due to become a manager, it was recommended that he should enter into the Grihastha Ashram. In India, we see that ashrams are also oftentimes managed by brahmacharis. If a brahmachari would manage an ashram, he would do well to create buffers between himself and women. But any manager, for that matter, if a male manager might as well, even if he's married and even if he has already five wives, still it might be wise to create buffers between himself and women, and maybe even between himself and his wives. Buffers are good things in this world, recommended. A manager must create buffers between himself and problems. And not that I indicate that women are problems, although Australians call the wife the trouble and strife. They say, how's the trouble and strife? That means, how's your wife? I don't necessarily ascribe to the Australian view, but just kind of totally objectively are presenting some view some views that that are out there within the spectrum, because I'm too tired to enter into a debate or to receive more email, so I'm neutral this morning. So I wouldn't, for a brahmachari, generally management is not the most preferred service. Better be involved in preaching. And the managers should also consider that and keep the brahmacharis away from slugging it out with the agitating material energy. Because management is like that. You deal with this difficult material energy all the time, which gives you all kinds of headaches. And then it's very difficult to switch off the agitated mind. And then the tendency, and it's a very common syndrome that after a big meeting, you want to eat a big piece of cake. You know? It's like, it happens often. And one sees that also. The lunches that go with big meetings are oftentimes extravagant. It's not surprising, because there is just a lot of mental torture that one has to experience sitting in a meeting. You see that in the drawings that come out on the notepads, and in the lunches that come after to compensate. And then, yeah, oftentimes it doesn't stay with a piece of cake, and then, you know, the Grihastha ashram is a natural consequence. So I think you have a point, although it's not carved in stone. Anyone else? Yes. It sounds like the blues.
For a couple of years, I see him every day. Was coming to temple, walking up and down, chanting like anything, saying, what's happening every day of the year? You know, you're supposed to take time to mourn and all that. So if I would have known, to be married. So, you know, both faces. So, the tendency seems to be to change the ashram.
Yeah. It's difficult to be married, I agree, because it seems, to me, again, from my personal realization, it seems totally unnatural that two people are so intimate. It's just we are not created like that, you see. We are created like separate units. And then when you actually, by some external arrangement, becomes so intimately connected with someone, and then that other person has such an incredible right, you know, right to kind of like just impose upon you, it's intense. That's the difficult part, really, that it's like, I think it's biologically unnatural. I think so. Unexemplary. I missed, if there were a few uns, I couldn't quite fit here how many uns there were. Was it an unexemplary grihastha and an, or both were, or an exemplary grihastha? That's the, what was it? Unexemplary, okay. Unexemplary brahmachari. Or an unexemplary sannyasi. Well, the sannyas ashram is so narrow, you know. The standard of sannyas is so rigid, okay? Because basically everything is forbidden.
because sense gratification per se is forbidden. So a sannyasi cannot say that, like, if the label is okay, it's okay. Whereas a grihastha, if the ingredients are fine, it's perfectly okay. For a sannyasi, it's not. A bar of chocolate is something nowadays that a grihastha, you know, would carry in his beat bag. A sannyasi, right, would rather, if there would be such a sannyasi, who I don't consider exemplary, would have one, he would sort of like, and make sure that the wrapper is burned. Because I know of a case where a particular, one of our senior leaders who sometimes makes announcements in relation to Tulsi in our world headquarters, was sitting in the back of a car with a sannyasi in the front, and the sannyasi put something in its mouth. This was in India. Threw the wrapper out of the car, and from the back came a voice, "Stop that car!" And he came out of the car, walked back, picked up the wrapper, and said, "I knew it was chocolate." So, the sannyas ashram is certainly demanding in this regard, right? Remove the evidence at all cost. And Krishna reveals the evidence. Therefore, to be an unexemplary sannyasi is very risky business. To be an unexemplary grihastha may happen more anonymously, right? After all, you know, there are different ways to fall down. Huh? The sannyasi, when he falls down, it's with a big boom and firecrackers. When the grihastha goes down, it's what I call oftentimes the silent fall down, and it only shows on the miserable face. Yeah. So, but in the end, you know, all unexemplary behavior is not going to help us. It's going to bind us in this material world. So, what to do? Who you're trying to impress? Because unexemplary sort of indicates that you're trying to impress somebody, trying to pretend, trying to create an image. But the truth of the matter is that we're harming nobody but ourselves. Well, it's not completely true. We're also harming others and ourselves, but especially ourselves. So, unexemplary behavior is madness in any ashram. Time to stop. I thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.